This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
I find it a little intimidating to be here, in my class here today as the fellow that took my place at Hillcrest. And something that has been on my mind a lot is I prepared this session was who's to say if our VS units are flourishing? Because I was the director at Hillcrest, you know, am I going to be honest with my self-evaluation? Were things actually flourishing there when I left? And I'd be much more comfortable titling it life in a flourishing VS unit than leading a flourishing VS unit, but somebody has to lead. And I felt that God did call me and ask me to go to Hillcrest for the years that we were there. I really enjoyed it. It was a time of a lot of change in my life. I valued working with a great team. We had a lot of energetic staff there. Life was very interesting. But I would also like to know a little bit who you represent. I realize when I give this presentation or this talk today, I'll be talking about life at Hillcrest a lot because that's been my background, and that's a nursing home. So if you would, I'd like to just quick go through and quickly say who you are and who you're representing, who you work with. All right, and our moderator's girl. So, well, I'm gonna go through here. When I was here 2 years ago, I have a little problem knowing how much material to prepare, and I didn't cover everything, and I hope to get done in time today to open it up and have some question and answer time. And I'm not saying I have the answer, but I'd like to discuss it. Or anything that I present today, I would like to discuss. I have a kind of a crude illustration here I want to use to get started. And I have a lot of times in organizational charts, especially in the commercial world, you'll see flow charts, and you always get this picture that there's some guy at the top. And you can relax. This is not what this is representing at all. And a lot of times in the training that Phil and I took at Hillcrest there, they turned this thing around and they said, if you want to do that, we need to represent upside down pyramids. Your leaders need to be under the people that are leading and supporting them, but in the way you lead. I'd like to maybe present a little different view of that today. And there's a subtitle to this subject. I would title it Leading from the Heart in Your Organization. And I'd like to just, I hope that this works for me. I'll tell you, it is crude. I want to put this up here so I can use it as an illustration as we go along. The bottom triangle is you as a leader in your organization. And the others are very important pieces to what you represent. This may fall over. If it does, it won't be the first illustration that flopped on me. So I'll explain this as we go along then. If the bottom one is the leader and he's relating to those that he's leading, the center part here is the middle of your organization, and I call it the heart of the organization. And there's valuable pieces that you're going to deal with as a leader. I'll call this one over here the team that you're the closest that you represent to. And at Hillcrest, we had a team of 5 men. Plus our dean, so we had about 7 people that were very close in administration and working with the staff and taking care of the elderly. Over here, I'll call this piece the staff, and this top represents the overall goal of what you're trying to obtain in your mission. And I'd like to talk about those 3 pieces there today. Now, the thing that I'm going to tell you is I want you to go back. For those of you that are involved in VS places now, and think about your first day on the job. For me, I was walking into, I had worked at Hillcrest for a year as a CNA long before I was there as director. That was water under the bridge way back there. Never dreamed I'd ever come back. So you walk into this place, there's a group of 45 people there that you're going to work very closely with. Outside of those, you're taking care of it. Hillcrest has about 130 employees, plus we take care of about 100 young old people and their families. So it's like a little city there. But, you know, you walk into that place and you have, nobody knows anything about you. You don't know anything about them. It's a clean slate for everybody. And life starts, you're just looking at everything with brand new eyes, and you could almost think, well, this, everything's perfect. Well, as you're not there very long until all at once, there's things that show up in the director's life. There's things that show up over here in his, the team. Nobody's perfect there. And these 45 young people that are coming, they always come with their baggage, things that happen at home, surface, at work. So how is it possible to turn that into something that's flourishing or that's bringing honor and glory to God? And I'd like to take a look at that. I'll start with leadership and move into teams. And then as we as a team relate to the staff and how that affects our overall mission of what we're trying to accomplish. Your handouts, I would welcome you to just lay them down. Basically, it's my notes. And so it's not so distracting. You'll also know that my parents did teach me English, but there's a lot of mistakes in here. So it's basically what I'm going to go across here. I did this so you don't have to write everything down, anything down you want that you want to. This way we can just have eye contact and have a discussion here. Paul said in Ephesians 4, 1-3, I therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. And I think that's a prerequisite for any leader, is to view himself as God views him. Don't set yourself up on a pedestal. The things that are mentioned here, to try to be humble and gentle and patient and bearing with one another in love, I think is just a good way to get started in just setting a motto for your life of how you want to work with people. Is it possible to get those that we lead, to get them to go to places that we're not willing to go to ourselves? And I don't feel that that's possible. There was a man by the name of George Mock that said, a leader leads by example, whether he intends to or not. You can't lead anyone further than you will have gone yourself. And I think that's a very valuable lesson for us to think about. If we want to see change in our staff, if we want to see change in our team, if there are things that we like to see change, don't expect them to change any more than we're willing to change ourselves. I just found it very encouraging to work with a group of men I felt that embraced change. That was a good way of iron sharpening iron. If we want to see staff come to Hillcrest and grow spiritually, then we better be wanting to do that ourselves. If we stay the same, we can pretty well expect those that we're leading to do the same. Recognize that you have nothing that makes you a good leader. Everything that you have was given to you. And I think if we realize our nothingness, I was very aware of that the first few months I was there. I was asked to lead in a healthcare unit that I knew nothing about. It's a good place to start. I think nothing is a good place to be, because your daily prayer, my daily prayer was, Lord, give me what I need today, because I don't have what it takes. And I think it's a good place to be and a good place to stay, recognizing where anything that we have, where it comes from. Paul asks the believers to pray for two things for himself, and one was for safety. I'll read this first to you. Safety from unbelievers, and that my service for Jerusalem may be acceptable to the saints. For us at Hillcrest, there wasn't, even though we did have a staff member that died on one of our mission trips, we weren't in danger of someone coming in and harming us bodily. But I think one thing that we fail to recognize in a place of voluntary service is a spiritual warfare that's going on. We have friends that were involved with a situation in Africa. And if you think about going to a place there where spiritual warfare is so prevalent, little boys dad was a believed in the powers of the witch doctor, and his mom was a believer. And somebody put a curse on the boy, and he'd be walking down the road, and his pants would burst into flames, and rocks would fall through their roof, and it was terrible spiritual warfare going on in that house. Well, a lot of times we look at a situation like that, and we think, wow, that, you know, we'd want to have strong Christians in a place like that, and we fail to recognize that wherever we're working in God's kingdom, that's spiritual warfare going on all the time, and we need to be equipped as leaders to lead in a place like that. Next point that I have for those of us that are in leadership is to accept. You know what, when you buy something, the instructions come with it, always at the bottom there's fine print. We need to accept what's even below the fine print. Many a day I thought of something would happen on the job that would just totally catch you off guard, or it had upset family, or something happened with the staff that disappointed you. I thought of it literally many a day that this did not come with my job description. If you can just get to the place where you welcome those things and realize it goes along with it, I think it helps you get through those times. Sometimes in a busy schedule, we can get frustrated with time management and thinking people take more of our time than we can afford to give. I found it very helpful in the morning to pray that God would not let anybody come in my path today unless they were there by his appointment. And then when they came, in my mind, it was already orchestrated by God. And it helped me just be okay and relax and knowing that they're here for a reason. The next point that I have that I feel is very important in the New Testament church, when they were setting up the first deacons for leadership, the first thing that they looked for was people that were filled with the Holy Spirit. And I think it's very important that we're filled with the Spirit. It's a command in the New Testament to be filled. And it's also, Jesus said, the way to be filled is to ask for it. In the story that he gave, the man that was asking his friend for bread, he asked over and over and over again. It wasn't for himself. It was so he had something to give to somebody else. And that's something that I feel is very important for us as leaders, is to be filled with the Spirit. Do not procrastinate what needs to be addressed. I found for myself, if there was somebody I needed to go talk to and I dreaded that meeting, I messed up a whole day if I waited till the end of the day. And you carry that dread all day long. It's better just to go ahead in the morning, have your meeting, get it over with, and enjoy the day. Another thing that I've, a tool that I found to be very helpful is the avenue of fasting. If there was something that needed to be addressed, where there was a personal meeting, I'm a firm believer that fasting prepares our heart, not so we can get the hand over the other person, but it prepares your heart to go into that meeting truly in a humble way. Because if you don't eat for a couple of days, you'll be weak in spirit, and I think that goes a long way when you're relating with others. The next point is learn to listen to God's leading. Think back to when you said yes, that you'll go to where you are right now, whatever job you're in or VS unit. Something got you to that point, and you said yes to God's call. You had peace about saying less, yes. Learn to continue to do that. I just think when you're in leadership, you have God gives you a certain sense, and learn to listen to the peace that goes along with that and what he's nudging you to do and when you need to make decisions. And sometimes your decisions need to be made that you don't have a lot of time. I'm more the one that likes to sleep over decisions. But sometimes when you're in leadership, you don't get that privilege. Be transparent. 2 Corinthians 8:21 says, "For we aim at what is honorable, not in the Lord's sight, not only in the Lord's sight, but also in the sight of men." And the last point I have for points for what I think it takes for leadership is welcome the pressure of those that are looking in. And I'm not talking about the community you're in. I'm talking about our church community. the constituencies that support us. I remember one of the first weeks on the job, a bishop from over 1,000 miles away called to Hillcrest and said he wants to talk to me. And he said, I want you to go out into the hall right by your office. We have a board set up there with staff doing various things, having good times, socials, days off. It's a kind of a storyboard from what in Hillcrest started in the 50s up to current times. And he said, look at one of the pictures that's on there. And it was a social that Hillcrest had actually before I got there, but he was there visiting and saw this picture and it bugged him. He said, one of your boys has a cigar in his fingers. He said, that doesn't look good. He said, I know it was a social and they were representing something, but he said, it doesn't look good. And you know, I was new on the job and my heart at first just kind of sank. I was like, man, if this guy from 1,000 miles away sees what's going on here, what am I doing here? But you know, as time went on, I got to the place where I welcomed that scrutiny. We have an obligation when we have places of service to have an atmosphere there that people don't have to second guess what's going on. We want to be accountable. And my recommendation to that is just be okay with being accountable and being under pressure from those that are looking in. And remember, you can grow good things in a greenhouse. You can see through the walls, but you can grow good plants there. Okay, moving on to part two, the team. As a leader, developing a healthy sense of inadequacy about your place in leadership. I think that's a good way to be. Remember that if you have a true team, you're not always going to see things the same. In fact, you often don't see things the same. And you get to the place where you go to a meeting, Phil's going to laugh at this, but you almost can anticipate your team members' reaction to what they're going to say about this. But the thing that blessed me in working with the team was how many times I went into a meeting thinking that I had the answer and coming away from there with a completely different answer than any of us would have dreamed up, because we worked together as a team to problem solve that. And if we, you know, it's a common saying, if we all think the same, somebody's not needed. But and when you do that, you're working closely every day with people that are different than you. It also opens a window for sources of irritation because they're so different than you. And we have to get to the place where we recognize our differences but also value our differences. Develop a sense of, I'm on the wrong line there. Another thing that we need to be aware of is be aware that our strengths can kill you. That's maybe slang language. But if you don't learn the very thing that you're good at, you can also use to downplay others in their strengths. A lot of times our strengths, there's conflict in our strengths. My strengths and Phil's strengths may be completely different. One thing we do have in common, we enjoy fishing, but you know, we don't always see things eye to eye. I can say that very freely because Phil's like my brother. So the other thing that we have to be careful with is we don't squash other people's strengths. I want to tell you a story here of where I really messed up. Do you ever think about it that you usually don't make a mistake when things are well thought out and you have plenty of time and you can do it well? That's not usually when, for me anyway, that's not usually when I make a mistake. It's when I'm under pressure. And we had, our board comes to Hillcrest annually. We were in the middle of a building project. There's a lot of things going on there. And there are certain things that have to happen when the board comes. They have to have a place to sleep. We have them in our homes for meals. We need to have snacks on the table in there so they don't fall asleep in their board meetings. And it's just a lot of things that the director is responsible for. And I had thought I had taken care of everything, and another member of the team went and thought she would be a help and get some other things going for that. And when I heard about it, it rubbed me wrong, and I didn't respond right. And later that afternoon, it just hit me. I felt like I got knocked down to my knees. The very thing that this person was very good at, I went and told her, everything's all taken care of. She doesn't need to worry about those things she's worrying about. And I feel as a leader, I made a huge mistake there. And beg for forgiveness because I really failed to recognize she wasn't trying to take over. She was trying to use her strengths to bring value to the team. Don't worry about who gets the credit. If you're not sure, if you have a problem with this, ask God to show it to you. He can help set that stage pretty quickly. I remember dealing with that at times when there's something you really want and it seems like nobody listens, you know, and you bring it up again and it doesn't really soak in. And all of a sudden somebody else a year later says the very thing that you've been saying and it goes over and it's like, I don't get it. But, you know, really as a team, if you can truly not worry about who gets the credit, you can get a lot more done. It's not that important. Something for us that we found to be effective, you know, if you think about working in a place, there's a lot of coming and going. You need to, by the way, Carol, you're going to tell me when I'm about out of time.
When you're 10 minutes.
Yeah, where are we at now?
25.
Okay, thank you. It can be a challenge to communicate effectively, you know, when you're working with a team. Something that we've found works well for us is to have a daily, we work 5 days a week, and we have a 15-minute meeting every morning as a team. And the purpose of that meeting is to try to make so our long meeting that week is shorter. And it just, it really works well the more effort you put into communication. I don't care how good you are, there's still going to be mistakes made. I remember one time, I think we went on a vacation and came back. And at Hillcrest, we have a program set up where we send the staff on mission trips. And it was the first time ever that a group of Hillcresters were going to Africa. The tickets were purchased, and everything was a done deal. And I had no clue this was happening. And it was good for me to be on the outside of a decision that was made, not knowing any of the details, because it showed me how it feels when somebody else is left out, when I try to communicate something and I miss somebody. That was a very valuable lesson of communication is very important if you're working with a team. There's a 5 characteristics of effective teams. I'm not going to go into them, but I'll name them. Common. It's important that you have a common purpose. You have clear performance goals. You have a diversity of skill and personality, strong communication, and the last one I don't really like that it's listed last, but it's trust and commitment. And thinking over those 5 areas, what will it take for those all 5 to be things that you're very good at in your team? And it all boils down to one thing, and that's time. When you're new on the job, you don't know your team members, it takes a long time to get to where you trust those people. Where you all have the same goals, in your differences, you still need to have the same end goals. One thing that I recommend is that you do more than just work together. I think if you only work together, it will soon lead to the place where you will take each other for granted. We value, at Hillcrest, as I mentioned before, we value going fishing. Going off for the night sometimes, but in the early days there, we tried to do this once a year, where us men would go on a camping trip and spend the night out there, and just having discussions outside of work, I think, is very healthy. Another thing that we put into place there in the early years at Hillcrest that I still enjoyed till my last week there was Friday coffee break. It's a time when we all go in the conference room, grab a cup of coffee, and for 15, 20 minutes, we just sit in there at the end of the week, and some of the staff come, those that come, the office girls come, maintenance comes in, and the only rule we have is that we're not allowed to talk about work. It's just a time when we interact socially on a different level, and we came that near solving the Flight 370 mystery. That was one discussion we had many a week in there, wondering where that plane was. The other thing to remember, I'll say this in closing of the for the team part, for us there, we might see each other 30 times a day. You work together for years and years and years, and you see that each other that often, you're interacting this close, you're aware of each other's imperfections, and then Sunday morning, you come back and you go to church with them, worship with them. It's very important to not procrastinate when there's issues that come up between you. You want to keep that brother sense of brotherhood open and taken care of. We can go to each other and make things right if there's things that have surfaced. Okay, I'm going to move over now to the staff. There's a saying from Simon Sinek that I really like. A good leader takes care of those in their charge. A bad leader takes charge of those in their care. And there's a huge difference. If you're going to lead from the heart, you need to take care of your people. A question I'll ask, especially in either one of these, in the meeting of our hearts here, is it possible to work very closely with people, whether that's teams or staff, and be efficient with your time? And I'll answer it my way. I say no. People take time. If somebody pops in your door and you aren't expecting them, and they want to unload, they're burdened about what they're going through, they need to feel heard. And you maybe have a stack of paper that we have a saying at Hillcrest, and haven't seen the wood on my desk for so many weeks because it's all covered in paperwork. But which is more important? And we have to get that other work done. But if people truly want to feel heard, it's going to take time. It's going to take your time. One thing I feel is important in a VS unit is I mentioned something in the last session of culture is what you do without thinking. Just go ahead and recognize that in your VS unit, you're bringing how many different cultures. I didn't know we had so many cultures. I'm from the Beachy Church, even in the Beachy world, in going and visiting different places, it blows me out of the water how many subcultures we have in one church. I'm going to say this. I don't want to be offensive to anybody, but this happened. I just got my chuckles out of it because, like I mentioned a couple minutes ago in the other class, even the way you drink coffee is different up here than it is in the South. Down there, we prefer to have our coffee after a meal. In the North, they like to have it with a meal. Just little things like that. We were visiting in a church that had a carry-in, and I just walked in there and looked, and it's fine. It was just different from what I was used to. There was a certain casserole made six different ways, but all in a casserole form. All had hot dogs in it. And that's fine. I didn't grow up with that, but it just struck me, you know, how different what we get used to.
We call that tube
steak. I said it's okay. I eat hot dogs, but it just hit me that, you know, and when you think about, all right, so we have staff coming from this church, and they're comfortable with what in their culture, and you're all coming to live under one roof, and believe me, there's no escape. They work so many hours a day, they play together, end of the day they go in their dorms and they sleep together. You can't get away from it. And we have a term that we use there. Usually in about 2 to 4 months, they hit the wall. And what we mean by that is they come to the end of themselves. It's a good place to get, because usually from there forward, it's good. When a person comes to the end of themselves, they're out of their comfort zone, the newness is worn off. Then that's when they get to the point where they're ready to start growing spiritually. But I think it's just good for us to recognize our differences. Also, keep in mind when you think of leading in a place like that or trying to gather into one common goal, the 12 disciples had quite a different background they came from too, and Jesus was able to organize that group of people minus Judas into the early church's foundation. You may get a person that comes in. I'm going to use this illustration. It's not that I condone the fellow's background, but this is supposed to be a true story. This is the kind of person you can work with. There was a JARS, a place that trains pilots for working in the jungles. Got a call. Guy walked in there one day, and he said he spent all his life flying fighter jets, his whole career, and he wants to. He said, I heard about your work, and I want to come be a blessing to your ministry. And they said, well, what do you think you can do? Well, you know, they're sending little Cessnas out in the jungle, and this guy flew fighter jets. They weren't prepared for his answer. He said, I want to do whatever nobody else here wants to do. He said, if that's sweeping the floor, let me do it. And if you get that kind of person in your staff, whether it's team or staff, that person, you can use them in a great way. But the truth is, not everybody comes with that attitude. I think everybody comes because they want to give, but some people come and simply have no concept of what you mean, even when you're talking about spiritual growth. That's sad. I remember very clearly meeting with a group of boys one night, and that term was brought up. And we asked them, do you even know what we're talking about? And one boy said, well, I guess we just need to try harder. That was not what we were talking about at all. We were referencing, we like to see some spiritual growth. And actually, that boy was there his whole term. He went with us on a mission trip, and I truly thought that he never got it. He came to Hillcrest, went through the program, and left basically the same person I thought that came. And 4 years ago, when this original meeting was held at Faith Builders, I was asked to look into the topic of why do people even go into service anyway. So I just felt led to, I went over the whole 60 years of Hillcrest and picked two people from every generation and sent them a questionnaire. Why did you choose to go in the service? And some reason, I don't know what made me do it, I sent that boy a letter. And he blew me out of the water. He sent me back a 2-page letter of what he learned while he worked at Hillcrest. And my mouth was hanging open. And he has truly gone on from there. Even his choice of a life partner said a lot about him. And he's made a fine young man of himself. It just, sometimes we're in the middle of it, you don't see growth. You have to be patient with those people. You also get people that you get your chuckles out of. We had a rule, at Hillcrest, you bring your own personal computer, the DVD player needs to be disassembled. We didn't allow that in the dorms. And Phil, that was a unit leader there, told this young man during his orientation that if you need it, you need me to help you with that. And he said, no. He said, I probably know more about computers than you do. So he said, that's fine. So he went to the dorm, and about a half hour, he came back with his computer in a big pile. Didn't know how to put it back together. So there's things that happen sometimes. You get your chuckles out of it. Get all various degrees of maturity levels from people come. And you may even have somebody come that's never been a Christian. We had that happen one time. A young man came to one of the offices and said that he's not a Christian. He'd like to be a Christian, become a Christian. You never know who you're getting. We do our best to figure out by the little questionnaires we send out, but you really don't get to know them until you start working with them closely on what kind of person you have. The other thing that's big is they'll bring their perception of authority. For some people, they have no idea you can be friends with authority because they weren't at home. Maybe their parents weren't the kind of parents they should have been, or their leaders in the church were at a distance. For some, it takes them 6 months to even recognize that you can actually trust and be friends with those in authority and leadership. Another thing that I think goes a long way with staff, if they can feel that we will literally do anything that we ask them to do. Sometimes in giving care to the elderly, that's not appropriate, but even if the elderly always have accidents, their accident may happen in the hall. If we're willing as leaders to get there with the staff from time to time and do those lowly tasks, I think that goes a long way in reaching those. I know for something that was the hardest thing that I went through at Hillcrest in dealing with the staff is, as I mentioned earlier, is when Casey Gingrich was killed on a mission trip. And the hardest thing turned into also the very thing that drew us the closest to staff. That group of staff will always be very special to us. We spent hours with them in the dorm through that grieving process. And that was a very drawing together. We were in that together. Be prepared and embrace constant change. You think about in a place like Hillcrest, you have two or three in, two or three out every month. The dynamics of your staff is constantly changing, and you just have to get to the place where you're okay with that. Now, some of the staff, you you get closer to than others. And when they leave, it's hard. But you just have to be all right as a leader to that this is how it is here. You just, everyone you get close to is going to leave sometime or another. I figured it up one time at Hillcrest. We have, at the longest, I think we ever go there without change is 2 weeks. Either an old person comes or passes on, or staff come or go. It's constantly changing. The last thing I'm going to say about those that we're trying to reach, for us at Hillcrest, that would largely be the elderly. Anymore in the nursing home, the true picture is most of the people we get are beyond reaching a lot of them. We have a lot of dementia anymore, and we have found it very valuable to focus on the elders' families. That's a truly big mission field. That's not easy for them to put their loved one in a nursing home. I had to change my concept of that. I thought a nursing home was where you dump people when you didn't want to take care of them. In Arkansas, most people have tried it at home. The truth is, if the parents are in their 90s, their children are in their 70s and having their own health issues, that's a golden opportunity to care for hurting children that they could. They're frustrated because they can't take care of their parents anymore. So how do you measure the success of your mission, your organization? For us there, I'll ask these questions, and I have a little story. I'll ask the question, is there love in your organization? Is there a sense of brotherhood? Do the staff take a sense of ownership of your mission statement, of what you're trying to accomplish? There is nothing that made me feel more accomplished than, let's say, about 5 o'clock. It was about time for me to go home, and I would see maybe a van or a car pull up to the side door, and some of our staff would go in and get a couple elders, take them out, load them up, and take them out for supper. When I saw that, I felt like we were reaching the goals that we had for the organization. It's not just a job. It's truly caring about those in our care. And I think the greatest way that we can accomplish that is by truly caring for those that we're leading, because they'll pass that on. Is there a sense of ownership of our mission statement? Are we being led by the Spirit? If yes, we're living and leading a flourishing VS unit. There was one of our elders was down in a comfort care room. It's a place you go when we think you have 1 or 2 days left. And the elder passed, and her daughter came to me, and she said, I want to tell you something. She said, 4 years ago, I became a Christian. And she said, I thought I knew what that meant, to serve Christ. But she said, since I put my mom in here, and I see your staff, how they took care of her, showed me how a Christian lives it out. That was probably the biggest compliment that a staff member could give us, to have them say that, if, you know, we see you get living Christ example in the way you care for others. And I'll say at the end, in closing, so neither is he that planteth anything, neither he that watereth, but God that giveth the increase. So if there's any good that comes out of our VS units, if it's flourishing, whatever it is only because God gives the increase. We just do the best we can with what we have and what he sends us to work with. I'd like to open it up on any of these four areas or any questions you would have about life in a VS unit. Realize we have quite a very various background of units here, but
can you explain a little bit more on the staff issue of your mentoring program?
Okay. What we have chosen to do there, I guess it's still the same, Phil. I've been gone 4 months now, but we divide that up in between those of our team, our wives, the deans, and maybe some even in the nursing program that have been at Hillcrest for quite a while, that whenever a staff comes, you're assigned to a mentor. And it's basically up to the mentor what you do with it as time allows, but it does give that staff person a connection to somebody on the team in administration, to whether you go to the coffee shop and have a chat every month or so, whatever you do with that. We also are encouraging trying to have a mentor day somewhere in their time there where you spend the whole day with them. It's anything from where a person you can go to for your to give an ear or to someone, you just come alongside of them and tell them you're praying for them. But for most of us, we spend, for the guys I had, I usually tried to go, usually in the, early in the morning before the day's work, we'd go out to the coffee shop and just sit there and try to get them to open up and get a picture into their life before Hillcrest and how their parents' structure affected them, how things were between them and their parents. And I don't know if that answers your question, but it's not really like we have a set way of doing it, because we have so many, like I mentioned, our team is diverse. Everyone has their own way. One man might take his guys out hiking, the other guy takes them fishing for a day. It's all about spending quality time with them and trying to gain their trust in administration there. It's just their window to the team. I never even thought about this. There's someone that's here that actually didn't grow up like we did, but chose to join us. And he's studied this thing from a distance. And his view is that we are truly developing leaders. He looked at his own congregation, and he said most people there had those that are the most effective spent time in a voluntary service unit. It's a way of starting to break the ground up, I think, of just being okay with change and asking God, what do you have for me? And I think it's important to not to just suggest going somewhere for a term of service, but to live a life of service. But thank you for that vote of confidence. Where are we at, Gerald?
About 2 minutes.
Okay. Any more questions? We also couldn't operate these places if parents couldn't send their staff. That I always knew I appreciated that, but I didn't know what it really meant until I sent my son somewhere. And I thought, oh, that's what parents go through when they send their children here. It made me appreciate it a whole lot more. Okay, well, I'll turn it back over to you, Gerald.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.